Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, June 10th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in my over 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. You can also click on a link and download that actual worksheet. It's a PDF file. No sign-up required. Just click on the link, download it, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. It's a tool I've been using to great advantage in my life for 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships. And the way I've been talking about it lately is to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of that infallible guidance system that we've all been given. From that page, you can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. If you listen to those, it will give you a tutorial for how to make the best progress with this tool. Put it to best use in your life. Some of those radio shows contain testimonials of people who have been actively applying these tools to their lives and talked about the benefits. And some of those shows are talking about the principles that lie behind these simple tools that Michael and Jeannie Rice make available. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game. We hope you do that soon and often because it will probably help you improve your life quality and relationships and manage your emotions. It will also most likely spark some comments or questions. If that happens, we'd be happy to entertain them here. That's why we're here. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we'll have a conversation. Today is the 161st day of the year, and that's relevant because we're doing the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook. And today's lesson says, very simply, give me your blessing, Holy Son of God, Holy Son of Love, Holy Offspring of Creation. Give me your blessing. And as I read through the commentary for today's lesson. I found it to be one of the more convoluted double negative kinds of commentaries. And so I'm going to simply say that, you know, the 10th paragraph says, today we practice in a form we have attempted earlier. Your readiness is closer now, and you will come today nearer to the Christ vision. If you are intent on reaching it, you will succeed today. And once you have succeeded, you will not be willing to accept the witness that your body's eyes call forth. Because your body's eyes show you a divided world. Your body's eyes show you that you're separated from your brother and sister and from the couch and from the wall. The Christ vision shows us that we are part of the oneness. And so when you've accepted this, you won't be deceived by the images your brain produces, or as it says in the Course in Miracles workbook lessons, your body's eyes. What you see will sing to you of ancient melodies you will remember. You are not forgotten in heaven. And so select someone that you see today. Anybody that you see, make them a symbol of all of the rest of humanity and ask salvation of that person. See him first as clearly as you can in the form in which you're accustomed. Here's eyes, ears, and hands, and feet. Watch him smile and make the similar familiar gestures. And then think this. What you are now seeing conceals from you the sight of one who can forgive all your sins, whose sacred hands can take away the nails which pierce your own hands, whose sacred hands can lift the crown of thorns which you have placed upon your own bleeding head. So ask this of the person you're looking upon. Give me your blessing, holy offspring of creation. I would behold you with the eyes of the Christ mind. And in that, I would see my perfect sinlessness in you. Whoever you're doing that with in your mind will answer in your mind. Be sure that you use this technique instantly if you should be tempted to attack a brother or a sister or have a negative mental thought about a brother or sister throughout the day, which means you will be perceiving them through your symbol of fear, the symbol of fear in your mind. Use this technique and see them as part of the whole, part of the oneness, as a living expression of the creative energy and form, just as you are. And your salvation lies in that. Today's lesson from the Course in Miracles experiment with Pam Grout, is lesson 161, is titled Mikara es Sukara. And if you look that up, it means my face is your face, or something close to that. Translations are never 100% accurate. Pam quotes Sarah Silverman as saying, I may not be totally open, but at least I'm ajar. Pam writes, Lesson 161, Give me your blessing, my holy brother, reminds me yet again, I see what I wish to see. The world in my viewfinder is not random. It's carefully designed by my frightened little ego to assure its survival. By showing me a partial world, a world of discreetly curated fragments, the ego gets away with its horror story. Today, I walk out of the theater of the macabre that I make another attempt to go beyond and to reach the light. If I really want this, again, this is not random, it is within my reach to see beyond the ego, beyond the body. Here are instructions straight from the Course in Miracles. I pick one brother or sister, and I see them in my mind. I picture her face, his hands, her familiar gestures. Now I ask him, all of this is done in my mind, by the way, for the blessing of seeing him or her as they really are. This simple act of love, looking fully at another human's face, imagining living inside and seeing what's really there, is one of the most radical practices on earth. In an instant, I realize I am not alone. So it's all an inside job. As they say in the movie The Point, the thing is, you see what you want to see and you hear what you want to hear. Did you ever see Paris? I said, no. You ever see New Delhi? I said, no. That's it. You see what you want to see and you hear what you want to hear. So that's our lesson for today. That's our challenge, to watch any negative thought or impression or emotion that arises in us whenever we look upon anyone or anything today, and to use this tool to ask that person that my egoic mind wants to blame for my upset, ask that person spiritually, intellectually, quietly to myself to bless me, to be part of my salvation, to help me see them the way the Christ mind would see them. It's a powerful tool and technique. I encourage you to try it, as does the Course in Miracles workbook lessons for today. And let us know what you think. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? How would it be most useful for you to spend this day? We had somebody call yesterday and give a very powerful testimonial about how the use of these tools has been incrementally and sometimes by leaps and bounds dramatically improving the quality for life and relationships. Have you tried these tools? Do you see a benefit? Do you have questions about how to best apply them in your life? That's what we're here for. I am thinking in terms of the workbook lesson today and how it resonates with me in line with the Gabor Mate book that on addictions and In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, I believe is the name of the book. And in that book, Dr. Mate is describing working in one of the worst drug addicted areas in Canada where he lived. And I think he calls it the Portland Hotel, and they've converted this hotel to basically be a place where these drug addicts can live. And they're not being told that it's conditional, that they have to get their act together, or they've got to be in therapy, or they've got to quit using in order to live there. So they're living there, and they're actively using. They're living there, and they are expressing the negativity, the self-harm, that comes from the traumas that they've lived through. They're expressing the experience of their pain. They're expressing the running away from their pain, avoiding it by getting into various addictive behaviors. So these are people that are not on the surface at all pleasant to be around for most people. These are people that would make you not just cross the street so you wouldn't be walking on the same side of the road as they are. You would run across the street, hail a cab, keep running, swear to never go into that part of town again, because these are people that are not well washed and cleaned. These are people that are full of sores. These are people that have infections. These are people that have obvious difficulties that would put them in the category of someone you'd want to avoid at all costs. And here's Dr. Mate that choosing to work with them day in and day out, and choosing to apply today's workbook lesson over and over again. And he talks very candidly in the book about how there are times where his egoic mind judges these people exceedingly harshly. And he understands, he has done enough of his own work to understand, that that only really happens when his shortcomings, his addictive tendencies, his ego gets activated, his self-loathing is activated. And the blessing that comes into our lives when we ask to be shown how to see anyone as our brother and sister, as the Christ mind would see them, the blessing that comes to us is off the charts good, beyond words. So that's what we're being invited into in today's workbook lesson. And it's the kind of thing that many people who have practiced it and chosen to work in some of the most difficult circumstances, where the other human beings, basically just like us, are in deep pain and that are showing the evidence of running away from their pain, that the symptoms of their disease, mental and physical, is evident. There's no attempt to hide it. And when people are in those situations, the tendency is to judge them negatively and run away. But the blessing that can come to you if you choose to be there and ask to be shown how to see that person as their Creator would see them, the blessings go beyond words each new heartbeat. Abraham Hicks talks about this quite a bit. A simple way to think about this is every time you're feeling negatively, when you look at someone, you're feeling an anger, a fear, a tension, a judgment. Every time that discomfort you're feeling, you're experiencing, is a direct product of the difference between the image your Creator holds about the person you're looking at and the image you're holding about the person you're looking at. And if you want to get rid of the pain, ask to be shown how to see the person or the situation that you're looking at through the eyes of your Creator. If you're willing to ask that, you will succeed. That's what the lesson is calling us to today. That's what it says. You can't help but succeed if you are fervent in your request. So, when I start talking about these kinds of things, I frequently get people that say, oh, so you're telling me that I should just let people abuse me and walk all over me, and I should put myself in dangerous situations. And I try to get very clear very quickly. I have never said any of those things. That's not even what's being implied in what I'm saying. I'm simply saying that we are far more alike if we could see all of the ways in which we are exactly like the people we're looking at and judging, we would see there is far more similar, if not identical, between us and everyone we're looking at than any differences our eyes would show us. One of the ways I've said it over the years is to say, the only significant, the only meaningful difference between you and any other person who has ever lived or will ever live is the degree to which you are able to live from the realization that we are all the same. The only significant, the only meaningful difference between you and anyone who's ever lived is the degree to which you're able to live from the realization that we are all the same. Now, if you're like most people, that sounds like gibberish or double talk or a New Age koan, because it seems to be a direct contradiction. And in truth, it holds a truth. It holds an absolute truth that can't be expressed by just saying you're like everybody else. So our eyes show us nothing. They are simply antennas. It is our brain that receives the signal from those antennas that creates an image. And as it talks about, the scientists that measure these kinds of things talk about, in the Anil Seth video that we've mentioned so many times, they tell us that 80 or more percentage of the information that's used by my brain to create the image that I see, 80% of it comes from things other than the signals that my eyes generate when light waves hit them. So 80% of the image that shows up in my mind when I think I'm seeing something outside of me is coming from my past experiences, beliefs, trauma energies, etc. It's not coming from the light waves bouncing off of that object or person and then getting registered in my eyes. 80% of the information that goes into making up the pictures that you see in your mind comes from places other than your eyes. Please try and let that sink in. And that's why it makes such good sense to actually do the practice outlined in today's Course in Miracles workbook lesson. If my eyes were just windows, if I was looking out of them, and there was no distortion in perception, today's lesson wouldn't make any sense at all. It would be as futile as whispering into a hurricane and hoping somebody on the other side of the hurricane could hear you. But the fact of the matter is, the images that show up in our eyes or in our minds that we think come from our eyes, they don't come from our eyes at all. They come from our belief system. They come from our egoic thoughts. They come from our training and conditioning. And there is so much more going on in the world in every moment than what my mind shows me pictures of. And one of those truths, one of those deep, powerful truths is that we are all part of the same mind and all part of the same creation. And the separation that my eyes show me, that my brain shows me when I think I'm looking through my eyes, is a hallucination. It is an illusion. So, our call number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. Today is a Thursday, which means there will be another MindShifter support group today. I can't promise it will be as intense as Tuesday's group. I don't know exactly what we'll watch, but to explore these principles more, to actually use the tools, to be in community with other people that are looking at gaining an increasing ability to take 100% responsibility for the emotions they create, it's free. You can join us if you have an internet connection from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time tonight. All the information you need to join is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And we hope you do, or we hope you pass the information along to somebody else that you think might benefit. It's a wonderful place to ask questions about the variety of tools that Michael and Jeannie Rice make available absolutely free at whyagain.org. It's a wonderful place to come and be in the community of people who are committed to improving their life and relationships. I had somebody reach out to me earlier this week and ask, who's that spiritual teacher you keep talking about in Oregon? His name is Guy Finley. And guyfinley.org is the best way to get good information about him. And like a lot of people throughout this time of coronavirus restrictions, Guy Finley has made all kinds of material available absolutely free. He's done a talk on Sunday and a talk on Wednesday, and some of his students do a talk on Friday, and he's opened that up and made that available absolutely free. All you have to do is type in your email address whenever you go to guyfinley.org/channel, and you can get access to this whole year's worth of at least 3 talks a week. And to get that kind of in-depth material prior to the coronavirus restrictions, to get all of that good, rich, hour-long talks, et cetera, with Q&A from the callers and explanations by Guy Finley, prior to this coronavirus year of restriction, they charged a small fee to have a membership to their website. But in the recognition of the need, Guy Finley just, without hesitation, jumped on it and has made that stuff available absolutely free. Very similar to what Michael and Jeannie Rice do and make available. Just, I think it's something like 3,000 hours now of internet show files that are available. Now that it's been more than 10 years of doing, the first 8 years doing 5 hours a day, or 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, and the last 2 years, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, of this what would now be called a podcast, but was originally billed as an internet show. Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. This lesson, I have an easy time doing it, this with a particular grandson with whom I am having a very hard time at the moment. So this is all so raw that I'm not even sure how to come around to it, but I'll just give you a little backstory. This is a grandson who lived with us for a couple of weeks this summer, and things went well, and he went home. And at one point, his mother, who is my daughter, called and said, he just isn't aware of what's happening in the house, and I am so busy at work, and he leaves dishes in the sink and food in the sink and messy this's and that's. And I've asked him to do chores, and if I ask him to do a specific chore, he may snap at me, but he does it, but I have to ask him. And I thought, well, Tim Bingham and I have been giving him an allowance every week. So without bringing my daughter into it, I just said, you know, an allowance is... In our household, we got our allowance as a result of doing chores. That was sort of the deal. And I would love it if you could, because we give him quite a nice allowance every week. And I said, I would love it now that you're home. We didn't do this at college, but when you were at college, but at home, how would you feel about making a list of household chores and sending it to me on Wednesdays, and then I'll send you allowance on Thursdays? Well, I didn't hear from him. This was last week. Didn't hear a word. After a few days, I wrote another email and explained how busy his mother is, and it's good training anyway, and so forth. Well, I figured he was angry because he didn't answer that either. Today is his allowance day, so I got an email from him, a text, and I have the whole transcript here. I guess my overall question is, sure, I can see the divine in him. It's no trouble feeling love for him, but on a very practical level, something isn't working. And I did a worksheet on it this morning and came out with an enlightened goal of love Jacob unconditionally, which I do. Love myself unconditionally also, and stick to my plan without guilt. Ask Jacob what he needs. Well, he was extremely angry that I would make these requests. He said he'd been doing lots of chores, helping out all the time, but he did say, I do whatever my mother asks me. So I said, well, why does she have to ask you? Open your eyes and just look around and do stuff. You're living there free of charge, and you're getting food, and she cooks. And we got into this awful argument, and he said he's been talking to his therapist, and our family is extremely dysfunctional, and I'm triangulating with my daughter and all this stuff, and I really feel like Tar Baby, that old story. I don't know how to go from here. He finally said, I don't have any money and I really need it. And he asked for twice as much as his allowance. So I said, if you're really doing chores, that's wonderful. And I'll let you work this out between you and your mother. And it was triangulating, but I didn't tell him that she had complained. I simply said, you know, I'm assuming you're doing stuff down there, and let's make your allowance part of that. But anyway, Dr. Tim, I don't know if you can make out anything from here or want to hear the transcript or what, how I should go from here, but I'm completely at a loss.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind when you were talking is let's address the denial and the hallucination that he's upset because you anything. or that you're upset because he anything, right? So
right.
The core of our work is to move into the greater and greater realization that each of us individually creates and therefore can learn to become completely responsible for whatever emotions we experience.
Right.
So he's not angry because you sent this note. And you're not all wrought up because he's freeloading on his mother and putting stress on her as a non-contributing family member. So let's just get clear about that, right? If I'm upset,
okay.
I'm creating it.
All right.
The next thing is, if you and Tim are giving somebody a gift, it's a gift.
Okay.
But it's yours to give or not give.
Mm-hmm.
You have complete control over whether you continue to give that gift or don't give that gift. If you and Tim are hiring somebody to do a job and paying them based on their ability to complete the job well and in a timely manner, then that's a contract between you and Tim, and you're legally, you know, morally, whatever, bound to fulfill your side of the contract.
Right.
So I would encourage you and Tim to get very clear about what is this thing you're calling an allowance, and is it just a gift, or is it a way for an underage person within the family to earn some money for their discretionary expenses by doing chores? And it's okay either way, because it's your money and it's Tim's money, and you can decide to give it or withhold it, whether the person has done any chores or not. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and we did switch on him. We were giving him this gift, no strings attached. And then I said, there are some strings attached, and that is probably...
Right. Which is okay. I mean, he's, you know, it's yours to give or not give, right? You could give allowance. You can give the gift of money once, or you can give it every month, or you can give it every week, or you can give it for every week for a year and then stop. It's your money to give or not give.
Right.
And there are circumstances that are changing all the time. Somebody
mm-hmm.
matures, they get to a certain age, they change their behavior patterns so they aren't as respectful around the house. Well, I'm absolutely happy giving somebody a gift, giving them an allowance or whatever, when they're pleasant and they're respectful. But boy, if they turn sour, if they turn to be a burden to the other people in the family, I'm probably not going to be as comfortable giving that gift, because in that instance, now this gift that I was freely giving, it within the system is going to get interpreted as a reinforcement for being rude and disrespectful and selfish, and I don't want to reward that behavior. So you've got this complex system going, right?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and it's changing, it's evolving, as everything does in time. And here's this, how old is this person?
21.
Okay, so he's reached a new age. He's got different, you know, demands that the world in general is going to put on him, new freedoms he's going to have. At 21, he can sign his own contract, et cetera. But he's also got, every time we get a new freedom, we get an increased responsibility. Every freedom comes with additional responsibilities.
Right.
And whether you see yourself as just somebody who's been giving him gifts, or whether you see him, yourselves, you and Tim, as part of the co-parenting team, right? mm-hmm. parents and grandparents, that's something you and Tim decide. And I would recommend that you have a conversation with this person's mother, because she's like the core of that team. And I'm of the opinion, the way I was raised and with this kind of accountability and respect for the parents, that I wouldn't be giving money to a child, a minor. Now, this is different now that he's 21, but I wouldn't be giving money to a minor or a child without permission from their parents and understanding what circumstances that would be under. Because it might serve to undermine that parent's authority with that child and any leverage that parent might have for this very kind of thing, chores done around the house, etc. Some questions about a very complex topic, and you're seeming to do it in the context of today's lesson from Course in Miracles, and I would just say there's no connection between stopping the allowance, giving the allowance only under certain conditions, etc., or continuing the allowance without any conditions. There's no connection between that and the Course in Miracles lesson. I can see somebody in their wholeness. I can see somebody as the same as me. I can see somebody through the Christ mind's eye and not give them money. Does that make sense? Are you there? No, you're not there. So, am I there? Can people hear me? 563-999-3581. Is Susan Bingham there?
Yeah,
hello.
I'm here and I heard almost everything, Dr. Tim, but somehow the call just dropped for a moment, and I called right back in, so I had to push one again. I only missed the part, and I think I got the meaning, that I should have made arrangement with the parents as to whether I'm giving this allowance, and we had talked about it. It's all set up and everything, but I'm not sure I got all of your meaning in that, and I do understand that this, I can see my grandson, according to the lesson in the Course in Miracles, and still decide not to or to give money. Yeah. Okay. I think I got it.
Yeah, and I would, this whole thing about a therapist telling your grandson that you're triangulating with, okay, that's a word, triangulating. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything good or bad. That means you talk to his mother talks to you, and you talk to him, and she talks to him. Well, that's just communication in a family,
mm-hmm.
right?
And
so it's the kind of thing that can get sorted out,
mm-hmm.
and it can get sorted out very, with direct communication. It's also the kind of thing that, if your son or your grandson in this case is used to getting unquestioned influx of money without regard for his behavior, his attitude, chores around the house, et cetera, and all of a sudden that money dries up, he can choose all kinds of negative emotional responses and judgments, but that doesn't mean you have to change what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And there are a lot of things that happen with us in our lives around the time that we hit our teen years and our early 20s that we aren't always happy about. But they're a part of the process of maturity and responsibility and the complexities of life in this culture we have set up. And it's not up to the world to make us happy. right? And if there's a situation where your grandson says, I really need this money, okay, but you're not his instant, constant, abundant supply of money.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably a quite intelligent 21-year-old with his own resources and probably capable of doing chores or doing, getting a job or picking up some part-time jobs during the summer to get his own money.
Right. Boy, a lot of worksheets and clarifications needed here, but your clarity is helpful.
Well, I'm glad you think so. But begin at the beginning, which is to get really clear about the fact that he's not mad at you because of something you did. Right? He could just as easily have a powerful dream or spiritual awakening insight and say, oh my gosh, Graham, this is perfect timing to help me realize that I wasn't really being a good family member and open up my efforts and, you know, I'm going to start making the meals and doing the dishes for mom and on and on and on. He could just as easily have that response.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be creating that either.
Yeah.
He's creating his response and you're creating yours. All the worry, all the fretting, all the negative thoughts about, you know, you're being told that some therapist has labeled you as a dysfunctional family in your triangulation. All of the negative emotions you generate around that, those are yours. Tapping, mm-hmm. breathing, goal-canceling worksheets on that stuff, that's what's called for here.
Yeah.
And after you do that, then decide on a response to your grandson.
Okay.
But the whole, here's another cautionary tale. It is, it's really counterproductive to try and hide the fact that his mother informed you about his lack of doing things around the house or her dissatisfaction with his behavior or performance. Now we're doing indirect communication and now we are lying, all right? We're introducing mm-hmm. deceit and mm-hmm. and now we're keeping secrets and now so the most powerful, effective tool for clearing things up in a family system is direct communication. And one of the most devastating, unproductive, even destructive patterns within family communication is indirect communication.
Well, we're guilty of that.
Yeah, almost every family is. And the only way to clear it up is start wherever you can, whenever you can, doing the direct communication.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stories abound. I've got them from my own caseload. I've got them from my own family, you know, where so-and-so talks to, Sue talks about Mark with Larry. And Larry talks with Brian about Susan. And then it gets back to Susan that Larry, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And everybody's upset and you're in a room full of people where half of the people know everything that's going on and the other half know only a portion. And people get offended left and right. And no one can straighten it out because I'm not allowed to tell Sue what Larry told me in private. And so every time I agree to keep a secret from somebody in my family or friends network, I'm tangling the web. I'm tying knots in the fishing line.
Right.
It's not going to go well.
Right. You're right. This is good, Dr. Kim, because I haven't been truthful with Jacob. His mother did talk to me. I wanted to protect her. I've got to fix that. I can fix that.
Yeah, well, you know, wow, what a load you just put out right there. Protecting her from?
His rage. He's a lot like his father, and he really gets mean. So.
Wait a minute. You're giving somebody a weekly allowance, a very generous weekly allowance, while they are raging at your other family members?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay,
there's something that you could start questioning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Kim, this is such a mess. It's to remain on his good side. Yeah.
Not such a good thing.
No.
And, you know, from the perspective of the person who's raging, they're
mm-hmm.
literally getting told in the behaviors of people who are paying them this unquestioned, you're calling it an allowance, but this unquestioned stipend, they're getting told their behavior is perfectly acceptable, that they're raging at their mother or other family members is perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And in the context
yeah.
of that money coming every week, when, you know, people know what his behavior is or his raging is, that money coming every week is a tacit, it's an explicit validation that it's okay to rage.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how many mm-hmm. times you say to somebody, please don't rage, that's unacceptable, don't talk to me that way, don't talk to your mother that way. If that person is paying you a stipend, allowance, whatever you want to call it, and they don't say, if you don't stop this, you're not going to get your stipend, then their behavior is saying it's perfectly okay to keep doing this behavior, this raging, this verbal and or emotional abuse of others in the family. Especially because it's not tied to any completion of household projects or chores or work that's been contracted. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. This has uncovered a huge thing that needs attention. Yeah. I don't even know what to say, Dr. Kim, but I think I know what I need to do. I have a whole, because this whole interchange with my grandson happened with text, I saved them all and printed them all. Because they're really shocking. And I think his mother said that he's smoking pot, and when he gets low on the pot, he needs money to pay for the pot. He's at school, so he doesn't have a job. But he gets nasty when he doesn't have his pot. And she says that's not the whole of it. That's part of it. But...
Yeah.
Anyway, You don't need to handle all this, Dr. Tim, not on this radio show, I'm afraid.
Right, and that's okay. And I just want to, you know, come back to the basics with you and say you have really good tools for dealing with your side of this equation.
Yeah.
And because you are a family member, the more you do that, the more you stay respectful, the more you hold your boundaries, the more you do your own work and return yourself to that calm, loving space before you choose how to respond to these other people, that's the more you're going to be teaching them and have that powerfully positive impact on them, not by getting them to use the tools, but by demonstrating through your life process, by your interactions with them and theirs with you, that these tools are improving your life. These tools are helping you restore yourself to calm. These tools are helping you focus on the things you have control over. What were you going to say?
If you read these texts, you will see that I've been using the tools. I stayed calm and loving and reminded him how much we love him and made some serious suggestions, but stayed in my okay space. And I'm glad because I think at least part of me was healthy enough. But this whole other thing about giving allowance when he's doing what he's doing, that's something I hadn't even asked myself about, and that's going to change now.
So I'm breathing with you and encouraging you to just keep using the tools on yourself and hopefully have some shift in options and bring in things like knowledge of how powerfully effective, helpful it is to do direct communication rather than indirect communication.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some of these situations, you want to recognize that if you've got somebody who's raging, you might use indirect communication to keep people safe or to keep things from getting, you know, more agitated and upset. But the goal is always to restore the direct communication as soon as you can with everyone being safe.
Right.
So, right, if you're in a situation where you think, well, you know, if I say this to him and let him know that, and then he's going to be going home with his mother and he's going to rage and she might not be safe, then you don't use a rule and apply it blindly just because it's a good rule. You look at mm-hmm. each situation and you say, safety first, safety first, safety first. And
yeah.
in some of those situations where people rage or get abusive, it might be necessary to do some indirect communication.
Yeah. Okay.
You breathing?
Yeah, I am now. Yep. Speaking of breathing, I'm halfway through your talk with that young psychotherapist, functional medicine man.
Psychiatrist?
Yeah.
Integrative psychiatrist, Dr. Andrew Pleaner.
Yes. Pleaner, yes, it's very good. I haven't finished it yet, but it's really good.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I'm glad that that's helpful to whoever it's helpful to. And we've reached the end of our first hour. So there's another hour coming up. Is this an all right stopping point for you?
Oh, sure. Thanks, Dr. Tim, it is.
All right. Well, feel free to keep me posted and blessings. And
thank you.
We have... I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And Michael and Jeannie are otherwise occupied and probably don't have internet. So the second hour today is going to be a replay of the Why Again workshop that happened once upon a time. So here it is for the archives and for your listening enjoyment.
What exists is energy in form. And relative to this integrated energy system that we call a body-mind unit, there are two qualities. There's integrative energy, that which is over on the left side of the board, and disintegrative energy, that which is over here on the right side of the board. Now, we've had the experience over the last 2 years. Our granddaughter came into the world just a little over 2 years ago. And, you know, it was this little baby, little structure. And you know something? She doesn't look like that at all today, 2 years later. And she doesn't look at all like she looked at a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months or five or six or 10 or 20. And what you have to conclude, if you get out of the dullness of incapacitated perception, what you notice is this form is a piece of plastic. It's in a state of becoming. And it becomes according to the energetic patterns in which we engage. If we engage in these things on the right side of the board, hostility and fear, grief, rage, anger, sadness, jealousy, revenge, then we're continuously putting into the cells that are storing that particular energy, and my offering is that every cell in your structure functions as a brain cell, functions to store information. And so we're literally changing the plastic nature of every cell and overall the whole structure of this thing we call a body-mind unit. And we're laying that on top of, you know, we can't just step in, or at least normally, I think we get to a level of power where we might be able to, but we don't just step in and make an instant change in a whole structure. Why? Well, there are 1,000 generations of that mind energy becoming flesh within each of our structures. You know, we don't have to direct its becoming, it's happening. But as we grow in awareness and choose to engage in energetic patterns, we start to direct its becoming. This side of the board, we direct it into the disease process. This side of the board, we direct it into health and wholeness and higher states of being. And if we lived on a planet where 7.5 people woke up every morning, 7.5 billion people, pardon me, woke up every morning realizing that this is who they are, how different would our creative process be? If we didn't have people playing these games, if we weren't playing these games, how different would this piece of plastic look for each of us? What would it be capable of? And as I say, when we engage in that mind energy and it lands on the cell, that mind energy, when it's of a disintegrative nature, the cell says, ouch, it informs us that the quality of our creative process is off base. But what do we do? Well, what our culture has taught most of us to do is blame somebody else for that. Have you ever said this to somebody? You made me really mad. You hurt me. You really have a problem. You ever said that to somebody? And the question I like to ask is, if they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? That doesn't make any sense. If they're the one with the problem, they'd be the one with the pain. But if you're in pain and you think somebody else has got a problem, you've got a problem. Now, we have a definition for the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is causing what's happening inside of you. And that's called denial. So denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is causing something inside of us to happen. Now, something outside of us can cause something that's inside of us to move or intensify in its movement, but it can't cause that energy to be there. It has to be there in the first place. But when we live in this game of denial, you know, whenever I feel this way, I talk about them or somebody or anybody. What happens is that in order to pretend that my feelings aren't coming from the interaction of my mind energy and my cells, I have to hide that whole process from myself. I literally have to dissociate from that process, and I have to hallucinate. I have to generate a worldview, a perceptual construct that tells me that the problem is really out there. And of course, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines, which many of you have used many times, is, if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, how is it that you're the only one that was there every time? Sooner or later, we have to acknowledge that we're engaged in our own lives. But if we spend our whole lives in denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me angry, you hurt me, that upset me, they disturbed me, then we have a device called a mind that continuously constructs the world we see as though that was true. And what that means is that the real cause of what we're experiencing, we have to dissociate from. And if you were involved in this work back in the early days, you remember that I used to write on the board, deny, suppress. And it totally changed the work when I was given this instruction. I mean, I had specific instructions that were given internally from Ruka that said, Michael, no, it's not suppress. It's not merely hiding something from yourself. It's locking it away and throwing away the key. Once you're in an arena where you're in denial, you made me mad, your mad is no longer yours to change. So guess what? You now have a life sentence of mad. Anybody and everybody that can trigger that into activity can seem to make you mad. Why can they make you mad? Because mad is there. And if mad is there, it's an energy. And if you pushed it down 1,000 times, there's a very intense high energy wave radiating out from you that says to all the world on an energetic level, hey world, is there anybody that knows how to make me mad? Have you ever noticed there's never a shortage of volunteers? Why is that? Because life abhors you being diseased. Life doesn't want you dead. So life has been structured, it seems, so that if you are holding to a dis-ease energy and you've dissociated from it, someone's going to show up, and that happens through the law of resonance. Someone is going to receive the energetic invitation to come to your life and do to you exactly what you never wanted to have done. And if you tell them what's wrong with them and you get rid of them and you go away and you take the geographic cure, you'll find somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. I feel so blessed the universe reserved the title of my book for me. Why is this happening to me again? Because virtually everybody in the universe has asked the question. And, you know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. Nobody told us that. They told us all kinds of crazy things, but they didn't tell us that through the energetic patterns we engage in, we create our own cellular health and diseases. We create everything that shows up. We literally create the way this piece of plastic called a body-mind unit unfolds and becomes, either toward disease or toward health. It depends on what the predominant resonant energy is in your structure. So for people who live in this state of denial, this state where it's all everybody else's fault, they hold all of these causes within themselves, but they press those causes down, hide them from themselves, and by so doing, intensify them every time they have to press it down, and therefore send out a signal that gets even stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, imagine that I've got a 3-foot diameter spring. It sits here on the floor and it stands 3 feet high. Can that spring do anything sitting there on the floor? Not at all. But what happens if I push down on it and lock it? And I push down on it and lock it. And I push down on it and lock it. What happens after years of doing that and I let the lock off? Whew, a lot of power stored in the spring. If I've been spending years and years and years telling everybody else why they're the problem in my life, I'm pushing down that energy, adding energy and information to it, and by so doing, I'm setting up literally an attractive energy field that will resonate or pull somebody into my life to do it to me again. So when I live life that way, when that's the game that I play, the things that I most don't want to deal with are literally stored in brain cells. When I talk about building brain cells in this work, I'm not talking about building new physical structure. I'm talking about the fact that every cell in the structure is designed to store information, literally to store frequencies. So every cell can hold energetic patterns and therefore function as a brain cell. When there are certain brain cells that I don't want to deal with, things that I'm in denial about, I push those things down and hide them. I intensify them. And by so doing, I set up a high energy wave. Now, I didn't know at the time how important a piece of information this was going to be way back, and this goes back probably 35 or 36 years ago. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science out in Colorado. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. He was the only non-degreed scientist that IBM ever had on their payroll. And the reason he was non-degreed was because he was self-educated and nobody could teach him anything. At the age of 11, Marcel invented chemical light. You know, you go to a football game and they've got these light sticks and you break the glass tubes inside the plastic and the chemicals mix and they light up. Well, that was Marcel's invention. He invented that at 11. His family didn't have the money. Marcel patented it himself. If your computer works, guess why? Marcel invented the magnetic coating on the plates of your hard drive that allows your hard drive to store information. That's the kind of mind that Marcel had. And what he did this particular year is he brought a thing called a Delaware camera. It was created by a man out of England named George Delaware. This camera is a little different than your average camera. Normally, you click the shutter, the aperture opens, light energy comes in, it's registered on the photographic plate, you develop it, you've got a picture. Not so with the Delaware camera. In between the aperture and the photographic plate, there's a tuning mechanism. So you can literally tune the camera, somewhat like a TV set or a radio, as to what frequencies it receives. And so what Marcel was able to do with this camera was he was able to attune it to the frequency of waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. And what Marcel was able to do was to take pictures of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So whatever we're holding in the way of mind energy within our structures, from our own lives or from our genes, we're literally sending out a composite of frequencies continuously. And because the universe is governed by the law of resonance, now the law of resonance simply stated says this, when two energy systems are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an interchange of energy between them when one system is amplified above the other. You probably remember from physics class in high school. You took a middle C tuning fork, you hit it on a desk, and you put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork. The second middle C tuning fork was not moving. But when you put the first energized tuning fork in front of it, the second tuning fork started to move. It's called resonance, transfer of information. So notice that this tuning fork is moving, and through resonance, that one starts to move. Resonance creates motion. You might think about let's imagine you've got a baby grand piano, and you have two of them, and you open the top of the two baby grand pianos. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of keys in each piano. But if I go over to one of those pianos, and I hit the middle C, and I go look into the second piano, there are going to be a bunch of strings vibrating in that second piano. Guess which ones? Only the ones that are keyed to middle C are going to be moving in that second piano. So resonance creates motion. Now, in the human realm, my offering is, resonance adds another piece to the puzzle, and that is resonance creates motion toward. So, you know, I hit middle C on this piano. The other piano isn't going to get up and crawl up on top of it. It's not going to create motion toward. But in the human realm, when I set up a frequency, those who are in resonance with that frequency are going to tend to be drawn into my space. And if there's something that I have denied and dissociated from 1,000 times and it's deeply hidden away in the darkest recesses of my mind, I don't even know it's there, but having pushed it down 1,000 times, it's got a pretty powerful wave coming out of it. Now, if this person has the matching bag of garbage, if this person has the brain cells and the behaviors that match what I've denied and dissociated from, unless they are very conscious, they will tend to be directed by that energy wave. That energy wave will resonate these brain cells in them. Those brain cells will fire, constitute their, what they would call their conscious thought and behavior, and they're going to tend to do a behavior toward us. Guess what the behavior's likely going to be? Let's see if that's true. Has anybody ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, nurturing and caring, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? What happened? Well, here's my offering. You went in totally committed to being loving and nurturing and caring, but their high energy wave set something else in motion in you. It resonated your mad banshee. And when your mad banshee started to move, that took over your behavior, and there you were doing it to them again. That's how the why is this happening to me again principle occurs. And guess what? Even if you didn't do it, they're going to see you do it. Well, Michael, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, it does when you know how the mind operates. Because here's what's going to happen. When they do that behavior, when they bounce off of that high energy wave in you and do that behavior, they're going to resonate those very brain cells that you've denied and dissociated from. When those brain cells start to fire, they're going to create a perceptual construct that will be projected from those brain cells, and you're going to show up in their mind. Literally, they will see a body that they call you in their mind with and made up of the threads of energy of what you've denied and dissociated from. So they're going to show up in your mind with your problem with that. You're going to see that it's their problem. It's going to be really clear to you. But then notice you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time. This is an internal process that comes about as a result of denial and dissociation. So what happens when we deny and dissociate, this is the energetic pattern that occurs. And then when those brain cells fire, and we live in a culture, you know, psychology tends to tell us that projection is taking something that's inside of you and putting it outside of you. That's not projection. That's externalization. Projection is when I take brain cells I've denied and dissociated from and I generate perception out of it. I generate the picture world that I see. Now, it's interesting, and of course, we've been teaching this for decades, but a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, we came across some research that was done by the CIA. If you go to CIA.gov, you can download a book. God knows how many taxpayer dollars they spent on it. It was called The Study of Human Intelligence. And there's a chapter in it on perception. They're studying how perception works. And here's their bottom line conclusion. You can go to the CIA website and download this book free. What it says is, the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. This perceptual world, the world that you see, is a generated world. And as a generated world, it is a construct of your mind. And until you interrupt what's at the root of the way your mind constructs the world that you see, you will tend to be stuck in this pattern of denial, dissociation, and then projection. Now, our culture tells us that we have a pair of windows that we all get to look out of and see what's going on in the world. That is probably the biggest lie you've ever been told. You do not have a set of windows that look out into the world. It's not possible. You have an antenna. It's called the eye. It's a frequency receiving device. It receives frequencies based in light energy. Light energy enters the eye, and through the law of resonance, the information that comes in through the eye resonates brain cells. And brain cells generate perception, the world you see. You can't look out through this antenna. All the eye is, as the other senses are simply frequency receivers. They're just receivers of energy. And whatever energy you have brain cells for, whatever brain cells it resonates in you, the brain, the mind, distinguish between those two because the mind functions through every cell in the body, the mind generates this perception. And it's interesting, there's some Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity going on within this structure. In that time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, the max amount of data that goes into building your perceptual world is 9 bits. That's it. You get to see 9 bits out of 10,000 brain cells firing, and it's been estimated that the actuality of the world perhaps contains as much as 20 trillion bits in that same time frame. So we're looking at a tiny, tiny fragment of what's actually happening in the world and a tiny fragment of what's going on within our minds. Now, when you get down to that, what you call this sort of a device is an evidential device. When you're only looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, you're looking at evidence. There are no facts there. There is only evidence. And there's a device, or there's a function of the mind called a bias. And, you know, in electronics, if you've got a, let's say you've got a transistor, and that transistor is designed to pass a certain frequency, you have to apply a voltage to it that allows that to pass. Well, it's pretty much the same here. You have to apply a willingness to have certain evidence present itself. And so that bias that is what's contained in literally our whole generational pattern. And as a result, the only evidence we ever get to see is evidence of our own BS. And of course, that's a belief system. Anybody else have a different reality for those initials? If you have a different reality for those initials, I'll invite you to notice that's your reality. It's not mine. It's a belief system. I've had people got, you know, upset with me for writing the initials BS on the board. And notice that they weren't upset because of my meaning, my reality, my perceptual construct for BS, belief system. They were upset and disturbed by a perceptual construct in their minds for those initials. Yeah. All upset is internal. You can't be upset unless you have an upsetting energy within yourself. And if you live in denial, they upset me, then dissociating from that upset, you will project it into your brain's image of someone else, and, you know, an endless procession of people will show up being the problem in your life. But you're the only one that was there every time. And when you understand that these eyes don't see out there, but the world you see is generated from the firing of brain cells within you, Dr. Tim introduced a video by a gentleman, and take a look on, you can go into YouTube and search for Anil Seth, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. And he does a beautiful presentation where he informs us that the brain doesn't see light and the brain doesn't hear sounds. No such thing happens. The brain, the perceptual system, is constantly making its best guess about what's going on out there. When you realize that's how your perceptual system works, then, and you realize that perception has a quality, you got to have a standard by which to measure the perceptions you're going to accept and the ones you aren't. There is a sign within your structure that will tell you 100% of the time when your perception is off base. And that is your perception fueled by either hostility or fear? Ever asked earlier, anybody ever accuse you of doing something you've never done or saying something you've never said? You know, most everybody in an audience will raise their hand, kind of a laugh. Yeah, I sure have. Take a moment and think about any time in your life where somebody's done that kind of accusation and they were not correct. What state of mind were they in when they accused you of saying something you never said and doing something you never did, even though they swear they saw you do it? I guarantee it's always hostility and fear.
Yep.
Now, probably that makes sense to you when you're looking at other people. But notice that you still have a tendency to trust your mind when it's doing hostility and fear. Hostility and fear are indicators that the mind is using corrupt data to build the world that you see. If you come from generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear-based perception, then it seems like that's the only thing possible is perceptions based in that. But the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. If your mind is generating your reality out of hostility or fear, and remember, this is reality. The perceptual output of the mind is your reality. And what's going on in the world, this 20 trillion bit world, is actuality. When you can let the actuality come in and teach you, well, what are you going to have to do to be able to do that? You're going to have to make a space for it to happen. You're going to have to collapse this projection. Guess what forgiveness does? Is forgiveness about letting other people off the hook because pain or trauma is moving in you? Forget it. Never forgive anybody for anything. And many people say, oh, yeah, that's right. I have to forgive myself. Never forgive yourself for anything because you can't. It's not possible. What the Greeks taught us was to let other people off the hook. They taught us pardoning in place of forgiveness and totally bastardized the idea of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool with which you collapse perceptions based in hostility and fear, and you leave a clean and open space within your mind for something based in active love to come forward. And when that happens, then what enters into and what fuels the human mind is this state of being that we are designed to function out of. And this physiological device becomes a home where love is incarnated and embodied, and it fuels absolutely everything. So the key tool that's needed, if you recognize that your life has any given arenas, it might be in the arena of relationships or money or business or work or employers, employees, whatever arena it's in, if you find yourself, your mind producing hostility and fear, your job, should you choose to accept it, is to weaken those frequencies of hostility and fear until they can no longer take over your perceptual system. Now, each of us has an innate tendency to perceive life in a certain way. That's because we have generational patterns. Remember we talked about there's integrative energy, there's disintegrative energy. Interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word that describes disintegrative energy is sin. It's an interesting word in Aramaic. The word sin has nothing to do with some terrible, awful thing that you've done. The word sin in Aramaic is actually an archery term. When you picked up the bow and arrow and you fired at the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. All it means is you're off the mark. That's all it means. And if I put an energy that's off the mark, some form of hostility or fear, into a cell, I begin the degradation of that cell. Now let's go back to the Aramaic way where they informed us the wages of sin is death. Now I can remember being a kid and thinking, oh, God's going to get me for my sins. That was what I was taught. You're going to be punished for your sins. And here we live on the punishment planet. How common is that belief? What if we lived on a world planet where 7.5 billion people could not even conceive of punishment, let alone reach out in punishment? What if we had 7.5 people who simply functioned as love and punishment never entered their awareness in any way, shape, or form? How different would our world be? I'm offering a worldview that that's possible, and that's where we want to go with this work. So when they said the wages of sin is death, all they were saying is, if you put disintegrative energy on top of disintegrative energy on top of, on top of, on top of, you're going to die. Your structure isn't going to be able to carry that burden. Literally, mind energy becoming flesh, that chemistry that we call it that lands inside the cell is going to create deterioration of the cell. You get enough cells deteriorating, you get an organ system failing. You get enough organ systems failing and you die. Life can't be supported in a system that is filled with sin. And it's got no connotation of, you know, evil, bad, wrong, nasty. It's just, what quality of energy are you engaging in? And then you remember they said, the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations. This is straight out of scripture, and guess what? It's got nothing to do with religion. It's just the way the system works. It's interesting. I came across this morning some emails from a friend from several years ago, and I'd sent him some of the material and the Beatitudes and the Kabbalah's manuscript, and he passed it on to a friend of his, business acquaintance. And I just read it this morning, and this fellow is Jewish, and he was putting forward some of Yeshua's ideas in Aramaic, these kinds of ideas. And this guy, this executive from a company he was working with, sent back, he says, what, you and Jew are talking about Jesus? I'm going to have to sit down and have a few shots of tequila before I read this. Because our world's been brainwashed that this is about religion. And that's just another scam to keep people separated and finding somebody else at fault and not living as their true nature. What this man said is, this is what causes you to die. And you have generations of that in there. Who told you that literally, I mean, you go back 4 generations, and that's 31 lives. Who told you that you have every thought, every feeling, every reality structured within your structure of the previous 30 people in your generations? Did anybody tell you that? The thoughts, the feelings, the attitudes, the perceptual constructs of mom and dad, and mom and dad's mom and dad, and their moms? Did anybody tell you that? This book called Scripture is not about theology. Here's where it's about genetics. It's about physics. It's about physiology. It's about psychology. It's about how this energy system called life works. But the Greeks didn't want us to know that. You'll notice the Greeks, you know, they had these gods that raped their own mothers, murdered their own children. Pretty heavy-duty group of folks. So through that filter came this insane interpretation of something was just meant to help you to determine how to live your life. So if you've got generations of energies that are off the mark in there, you're in trouble. And of course, you think about 3 to 4 generations, and where did the previous fourth generation back get their thoughts, their feelings, their realities? But from the previous generation and the previous. And so what this work ultimately is inviting you to do, and I'll say that having developed this and worked with this for almost 50 years now, when people are first introduced to this, they get it on a certain level. But it isn't until people work with it for 5 to 10 years that they really grasp what it's about, what it really means. And what we're inviting each of you to do is to develop a skill unheard of in our culture. And that is the skill of being able to delve inside of your own energy system, to learn to collapse projections of untoward energies, move into and literally decode what's in the cell. Literally, that mind energy comes in, lands on a receptor site, is integrated into the cell. The skill is to pull that out of the cell and throw it away. That's forgiveness. And to be able to literally develop the skill to go down to the point where you literally are sensitive enough to the energies contained within your structure that you can go back into the generational patterns and pull the neuropeptides out of the genes that create that pattern, that create this inclination that's activated in certain ways in your life. So we're inviting you to develop a set of skills. And it doesn't happen on day 1 or day 2 or day 10 or day 20. You know, I have people like, you know, oh, I got $5 in 5 minutes. Tell me everything you know, Michael. No, that's not how it works. I use an example of that. And I say this by way of hopefully inspiring you to really take. I'm suggesting you do at least 2 worksheets a day in each assignment as they come, as we go through this intensive. And if you do, through the period of the 14 weeks, you'll integrate it into your life as a habit, and it will become yours for life. That's one of the benefits of doing this intensive this way, as opposed to people coming to Heartland for 16 days and doing it all, but then taking it back to their lives and trying to integrate it into their daily lives. It's a challenge. But ultimately, what we're inviting you to do is to develop the skills of being able to go into the deepest parts of your structure, access what's there and what doesn't belong, to literally be able to throw it away, to remove it. And what does that look like? What are we capable of? And I use an example. Michael J., my son, is a computer nerd. And when he was about 15, he decided he wanted to learn about computers. And I had a student friend in Kansas City who was a former NASA computer scientist. And he's someone that I've worked with for several years. He'd done my work, and we just became buds over the years. And so I called Graham and I said, hey, Michael J. wants to learn about computers, and I know you've got a computer school aside from about 4 computer businesses. Can Michael come and work with you? He said, sure. And Michael J., of course, was raised at Heartland. And thank you to Fran Tyner, because Fran was this the first 2 or 3 years that we were at Heartland, and Michael J. was, you know, I guess he was about 8 or 9, and he became Fran's tail. He went everywhere Fran went, and Fran just had this ability to do anything with his hands. So Michael learned that skill from him. And so he ended up going and living in Graham's home and doing kind of an exchange with him for room and board while he was going to school and studying computers. Actually, over a period of a couple of years, when Michael J.'s stereo system left the house, we knew he'd gone to Kansas City, and that was it. But I tell the story because there was a point where I had bought a new computer. And when I got that computer up and running, got it online, you know, this is back when you pushed the button, it went beep, 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 all these tones, and you got this crawling thing that happened. Well, it didn't work properly. So I called the company, and I don't know, I spent 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on with technical support. They couldn't get the computer working. So I said, well, pack it up and send it back to us. We'll fix it. So I packed it up, sent it back to them. 2 weeks later, I got the computer back. It's ostensibly fixed. I plug it in. Same problem. Exact same thing. So I got on the phone with the computer with tech support again, go through the whole routine. They can't get it working. So I don't bug Graham because he's a really busy guy. He's got 3 or 4 businesses. And so I picked up the phone and I called and said, Graham, I apologize for bugging you, but I got a problem. Can you help me? And so I explained what had happened, and, you know, I sent the computer back and they couldn't fix it. And, you know, what do I do? It's a brand new computer. He says, okay, well, go to a C prompt. At that point, I was a little bit ignorant of computers. I said, what's a C prompt? And I followed his directions. He said, well, put in a string of letters and hit a return. So I put in a string of letters, hit a return. Read to me what it says. And I read it to him. And he says, okay, type in this string of characters and hit a return. Read to me what it says. So I put that in, hit a return, and I read it to him. He says, okay, your computer's fixed. What? Your computer's fixed. Oh, now, come on, Graham. I mean, I sent it back to them. We've spent hours on the phone. Michael, your computer is fixed. Guess what? My computer was fixed. Now, the company that built the system couldn't troubleshoot what Graham did literally in 3 minutes on the phone. That's called having brain cells for something. Are there challenges in your life? Are there hostilities and fears that you can't seem to overcome? Are there disorders and diseases that just don't seem resolvable? Well, as I said, 5 to 10 years of engaging. And people say, well, that's a long time. I don't know if I want to. Well, what else is there to do? There is no other path to this end result than doing your work. You know, in the ancient times, they wanted an instant fix too. Well, $5, 5 minutes. What did they say to them? You can't storm the gates. You can't do it. It takes doing your work. You have this body-mind unit. There are generations and generations and generations of untoward energies in there. And you've just got to clean it up. Now, I've spent the last half century studying how to do that, how it works, what that all means. And this is my end result. It was actually the thing that inspired me to take it to the next level. My son just turned 40, was his birth. And when he came into the world, it was just like so awesome and delivered him, or caught him with my hands. And it was just so amazing. And then I looked at the world at that time, and it's like, well, if somebody doesn't do something, there isn't going to be a world for this little one to grow up in. And this is what I did. And so I invite you to be on the team and be part of the process and key into how this process of healing works, what it really means. And the core of the forgiveness process, we're not actually going to get into doing the worksheet tonight, but we're going to get into what the core of the forgiveness process is. And from there, you can tap into, and you know, you can go to our website, or pardon me, to your phone's app store, and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at the world's, as far as I know, only forgiveness app. You can do the worksheet. There are 2 different versions of it on that, on your phone now, once you download that. And or you can go to whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it says start here. Click that button. It'll walk you through literally 50 years of what it took to understand how this process of forgiveness works. And what I'm going to explain to you right now, I didn't understand until I had worked with this for about 35 years. It took that to decode from the Aramaic and come to understand all of the aspects of how this comes together, the physiology, the physics, the psychology, the genetics of it, and how it all works. But suffice to say, in its shortest form at this moment, perception is the output of your mind. It's made of 9 bits of data. If your perception is fueled by any form of hostility or fear, you have a problem because you are suffering from degraded perception. And your life will never go the way you want it to go while your perception is degraded. Underlying degraded perception is generations and generations and generations, pardon me, our generations of unresolved hostility and fear. The thing that drives this whole process, and you'll notice in your life in general, I mean, unless you're just a naturally nasty person, excuse me, if your persona is that degraded that you're a naturally nasty person, you'll notice that as long as everybody's doing what you want them to do, you're a pretty happy camper. But when someone, yourself or someone else, is not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them, that's when you go into hostility and fear, degraded perception, and untoward behavior. Why? How does all that work? Well, here's what happens. Obviously, if there are 10,000 brain cells firing, and this is the most quoted piece of psychological research, and was done back in the 60s, if I remember correctly, this is the most quoted piece of research in psychological history. 9 bits of data, 10,000 brain cells fired. Now, there's other research that's come up since then that says, no, it's 13, it's 12. It doesn't matter. The point is, we get to see a little tiny fragment of what's really going on within us. And obviously, something has to determine which 9 bits of data your mind is going to use to build your perception. Something has to make that determination. What is it? The driver for that whole process is your goals. When you load a goal in the mind through resonance, everything associated with the frequency of that goal. Remember, everything is frequency. You know, I actually don't speak words. I've never spoken a word in my life, and neither of you. We call it words, but actually, I have a little flap of skin in my throat, and I know how to blow air over it so that it creates these things that we call words. But what's really happening is this air moving out causes air molecules to move. The air molecules moving cause a little drum inside of your ear to move, and that drum moving sets up an electrical frequency, and nothing is communicated by that except frequency. No light, no sound, no nothing goes in there or here. What goes in is frequency. And then that frequency causes brain cells to fire. And now your whole history, including your whole genetic history through the last 1,000 generations, is set into activity through the law of resonance. Whatever that goal resonates in you is going to be the information that is recruited by that goal to produce the perception, which includes your attitudes and your behaviors. If you don't like the behavior that you're doing, you know, we hear about the alcoholic that got drunk and did crazy stuff. And the next morning when they wake up, they are so repentant. Oh, that's so terrible. I will never do that again. And they really mean they're never going to do it again. But guess what? Next time they get drunk, they'll do it again. Remember we talked about inhibitors earlier? What's the first thing that happens with alcohol? Excessive amounts of alcohol knock out inhibitors. And now all the generational patterns that were never allowed, they were always shut down, they were always inhibited, will come into play, and people do crazy stuff. And much as they feel sorry the next morning and swear they're never going to do it, unless they go in and clean up these generational patterns, they're going to do it the next time the circumstance warrants it. And so goals are the driver for this process of billions of bits of information moving in the world, billions of bits moving in us, and 9 bits end up producing the world we experience, the thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, and the energy we engage in. And this process is designed to be fueled by active present love. That's the power supply that it's designed to work with. Now, does anybody have a device in your home, your office, your shop, your car, your business that works really well when you unplug it? Human perception is designed to be fueled by human life. It's designed to be fueled by active present love. If your perception is fueled by hostility or fear, then you're not even human. Just because one has a human form does not mean they are human. Remember holding the newborn? Go back and hold that newborn child. Notice when you hold the newborn, what serenity, what peace, what sweetness, what the presence of love is like. Then ask yourself a question. Is the newborn loving me or is the newborn love? My offering is the newborn is the active presence of love, and so are you. If the active presence of love isn't active in your physiology, then there's no human life, because it is love that is human life. Remember Yeshua said, I come to bring you life? You look at his whole body of work, and the whole thing is about how do you get rid of the hostility or fear, and how do you fuel your mind by the active presence of love? Now, it's a two-part process. One part of the process is the dissolution of the generational patterns that do not belong. That's called forgiveness. Forget about ever forgiving anybody ever again. And it always amazes me, because I've had people who have been around my work 10, 15, 20 years, and they'll still talk about how well I forgave them. Stop. Never forgive anybody for anything. If you choose to pardon someone, you know, they did something crazy, and you go, I can let that go. I'm going to let it go. I'll pardon you. I'll let you off the hook for that. That's done. But if you call that forgiveness, you won't actually do the next level, which is go inside yourself and remove and clean up the untoward energies that never belong within a human structure. So forgiveness is about the removal of what never belonged. That's half of the process. And the other half of the process is the integration of active love into every cell. To literally create a space in this form where love actively shows up in physiology. Now, the short form of the forgiveness process, and again, please use the radio show, ask questions. The short form of the forgiveness process is, the word forgive in Aramaic is shebag, and it literally translates from Aramaic to cancel. Now, what is it that I cancel? Do I cancel you? Well, that's murder. Probably not a good idea. Do I cancel myself? Well, no, that's suicide. Let's let that one go. But what in every circumstance where I have upset or disturbance going on, that means there's an untoward energy moving in my physiology. If I'm going to come out of my denial, what is it that I can cancel to change that whole process? When I cancel my goal, the perception generated as a result of that goal collapses. When it collapses, I now have a clean and open space within my mind where these underlying energies can surface. Because when I cancel a goal and collapse a perception, what happens is a pathway is open into the unconscious or the dissociated content. And what I've dissociated from, depending on my level of willingness, what I've dissociated from will start to come upward to awareness. Now, when I say awareness, it might just be awareness of the energy moving. And it might be specific memories of things that have happened. It's not necessary to go back and remember each dark, dirty, nasty thing that happened in your life. And it's not about laying on the couch and, you know, examining what happened for 30 years until you find that thing. It's about living in and as the active presence of love, making a commitment to that. And as you walk through life, the next piece of work you're ready to do, resonance will bring somebody to you that will resonate what you need to deal with. If you keep it hidden, then you'll only get this surface projection and you'll think it's somebody else. When you cancel the goal, you collapse that perception. It took me 35 years to learn this piece of information. And I understand why the Greeks turned it into pardoning, letting other people off the hook. I understand it fully, because until you've got all these pieces, you know the physics, you know the physiology, you know the high energy, until you put all those pieces together, canceling a perfectly good goal does not make any sense at all. Gee, I just want that person to cherish me. And they're raging at me. Why would I cancel my need to be cherished? Because I'm in terror. Oh, so my physiology is producing terror because I want to be cherished. Oh, so Michael, what you're saying is what you now understand about me is that in my file on being cherished, there's terror. Oh, okay, I see. So if I cancel my goal for them to cherish me, my projection on them collapses, and it opens a pathway into all this terror that's stored within my brain cell structure, and maybe the terror that's stored from 30 generations ago that needs to be unwound. Oh, now I'm starting to see what forgiveness is as I cancel the goal. Now, I have a 9-bit processor. That's what we're going to call it for the sake of whatever term we're going to use. If I've got something that's been going on in my bloodline for 25 or 200 generations, and I can process 9 bits at a time, what chance do I have? It's impossible. I mean, it's silly to even try. Fortunately, this man Yeshua understood another major piece of information. And that was that at creation, there was a power put in us that in Aramaic was called Ruka Dekudsha. The Greeks translated these words as the Holy Spirit. Nothing about a disembodied spirit being in the term Ruka Dekudsha in Aramaic. In Aramaic, those terms speak of a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So when I become willing enough, I will literally, I mean, one of my best examples for, I don't know, 35 years or more. If you were in my workshop 35 years, or, well, 15 years ago, these weren't the words at the top of the board. This word was suppressed. Literally, as I'm sitting and I'm making some changes to the worksheet, the one you see on the website now or in the app is probably at least version 3020, I was sitting doing some work with it, and literally I'm told inside my head, Michael, it's not suppression. That's not clear enough. It's dissociation. What do you mean dissociation? It's not just that you've hidden it away. It's that it's no longer yours. It's gone. You can't change it. When you understand that denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is the cause of this that's in you, then you have to believe that, hide the real process that's happening inside of you. This genius, Yeshua, genius. I mean, how did he come up with this? I don't know. But here's what he showed us. Cancel the goal. Collapse the perception. Perception drops in on its root. You've now got access to the hidden part of your mind. Bring it forward in the presence of love, and then there's a super processor that is available to you. In Aramaic, it was called Ruka Dekudsha. She, a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So at the point where I cancel the goal and collapse, I may open so much that I'm so overwhelmed. This is part of the whole flood idea. You know, I'm so overwhelmed. There's just so much to move. How do I do it? I connect with Ruka. What is Ruka? In the original Aramaic, they never said anything about God sending out his spirit. What it says is the Creator sent out his breath. We have access to this phenomenal super processor called Ruka Dekudsha. She will, if you invite her to, undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. Now, if you've still got a use for one in your lives, well, I just want to keep this little bit of hostility back here so I don't need to protect myself, then she's not going to touch your hostility. It's yours. Hang out with it all you need, all you want. But when you really surrender, when you're ready to really let it all go, she will process you right down to your genetic toast.